Right, hello everyone. Today we have Julian from Austria, the place, the only place on this world. What's up, man? How's it going?
Hey, man. Yeah, it was so funny. Like when I saw that you are currently in Vienna, right? Like, are you? You said you're not from Vienna, though, right?
Yeah, I'm originally not from Austria, but I live nearby Vienna. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a good place to live for sure. Like, I do miss it sometimes, and I want to visit it again this year. But anyway, enough about Vienna.
All right, so let's tell the viewer a little bit about yourself, a little bit of introduction. What do you do? Who you are?
Yeah, sure. So currently, I'm a tech artist at Cloud Imperium Games. You know, you might know us from our main game, Star Citizen, and the other one that we're working on, Squadron 42. And before that, I've done primarily architecture, like architecture visualization, where I did, you know, like procedural tools using Houdini. And I guess in general, I was always doing kind of R&D roles, you know, like looking for certain tasks that could be either automated. Like basically, there was always like two directions. Either there's already a certain workflow that we know and we just want to speed it up. Or maybe there's a whole new thing that we haven't even tried because it's too crazy. Because you're like, well, we can't do that by hand. And those are usually the more exciting ones. Those are the ones that I like the most. And I guess that's kind of what you're seeing on screen. I guess the idea is like, you know, making something like these bridges would be, I guess you could maybe technically do it by hand, but it would take so long that probably no one would do it, especially in such a short time frame. I guess, and before that, like my whole journey started basically already when I was a kid. Like since I was 2 or 3 years old, I loved playing video games, and I always loved everything creative, everything art related, be it drawing, crafting things out of whatever was lying around in the house. And I guess I always wanted to do video games. I just didn't know that that's like a real thing that you can, you know, really do. But then you find out, oh yeah, wait, people make those and it's a job. And then I went to the Games Academy in Berlin. It's a school where you know, you can learn about either game production, game art, game programming. And yeah, and I feel like that's when it really started, when I started to really get more interested in the topic and exploring all these different avenues. But it was a long journey. I wanted to be a concept artist actually. But I felt like when I kind of saw what the reality is, it was a bit too crazy for me. And then I was like, okay, maybe I'll do 3D. And then I wasn't sure, like, maybe I want to do environment art. Maybe I want to do, I think, weapons for a time. I also was thinking about props, hard surface. And, you know, I tried all these different things. And I guess the red thread, I guess that's the saying, right? Like the one thing that connected it all was I just really like 3D. I really like how 3D works, like the technical foundation. And that then, after some time, led me to Houdini. And it's the coolest thing ever. I don't really want to do anything else anymore. Just like procedural stuff in general is so cool. Like coming up with these recipes, these algorithms to tell a computer how to do something you would do. That's kind of my thing.
What is the most thing that you hate about it, though? Because like love comes with hate too, right?
That is true. It is sometimes a love-hate relationship. I guess like the one thing that me and my colleagues sometimes rant about is like, you know, sometimes the most complex things, or the things you assume are the most complex, are super easy. You know, like you've been fighting for months, or not months, but days and weeks on this one thing, and then you find out there's a node for it, and you're like, oh wow. But then there's this thing that you think should be super easy, and then it's the craziest, hardest thing. Like I had this, I forgot what exactly the situation was, but all I wanted to do was I had a mesh, and along an edge, I wanted to remove the points, but keep the plane, the face intact. And doing that in Houdini is so crazy hard. It's not even funny. And it's like, which is like a super basic task. You know, in 3ds Max, you just press backspace and then that's what you get. But in Houdini, you need to come up with some kind of crazy, with some crazy setup to get something like that going. I think at least if you guys out there, if you know how to do this, please drop it in the comments. But I think there is not really an easy way to do that. That's maybe one of my gripes. Yeah.
Yeah. So there will be always that one thing that will make you hate working with Houdini, I feel. But all the problems, I feel like every question in the world, the answer for it is Houdini can do it. Houdini will do it. But the how is...
But the reputation is kind of dangerous sometimes. I started to notice, like, you know, the more I do it professionally, the more I try to, like, lower people's expectations. Mm. Because so many people are like, Houdini, that's magic, man. What? And sometimes you're in a meeting with some higher up people and they think like, oh, it's magic, man, right? But then you have to, like, really tell them, like, no, it's not technical. Magic.
Yeah.
Every single thing I have to explicitly tell the computer. And if I don't, or if something unexpected happens, the thing will fail. It's super fragile, right? It does look magical, right? Like when we look on the screen and you see like a bunch of blocks get turned into a building or the bridge tool that I made, it does look like magic, but like magic, it's smoke and mirrors. And it's usually something really simple that is actually doing the thing.
Yeah.
It's just obscured.
Yeah. Here's a question though. Like, if what we do with Houdini, like as stick artists, is performative magic or performative art, how does it feel not to perform that? I guess. Like, are we always hungry to show what we do?
What do you mean?
Like smoke and mirrors, right? Like you said, like actual magic. It's performed in front of audience, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we do a bit of that, but of course, not as performative. It's just it makes it in the game, and you get to see our name at the end of the credits, right? That's it. That's the exposure that we get. Do you feel like you're hungry to show how cool like your skills are and what you can do? And was that like one of the motivations to go on Project Skylark?
I see what you mean. Yeah, for sure. Right. Because it is kind of a shame that, you know, you put all this effort into it and you come up with sometimes these really crazy solutions to certain problems. But then all that people see kind of is the static end result. And, you know, in theory, someone could have done it by hand, I guess. And with just an insane amount of time or manpower.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, this plays a role into it. Like I like to share what I make. I also like to, you know, to show people that it's not that hard, because I felt like, because Houdini has this reputation that it's really hard and it can kind of turn people away. And in the beginning, I was on a tipping point when I was thinking about doing it. And I was like, oh, everyone says it's so hard. Maybe I shouldn't try it. Then I'm like, you know what? Who cares? Like, let me just see. And then I was like, no, wait, it's not that hard. And it's super fun. No one told me how fun it is. And I guess I wanna show that to people. And I just want to, I guess these videos, if I'm being honest, like a lot of these videos are kind of more for me. Like I just kind of, I only like to post stuff that I look at and I'm like, oh yeah, that's cool.
That's what I'm trying to say is that like I feel like we are like, if there was no computers, right? We go back to whatever Stone Age, right? I feel like we would be on stage doing tricks. That's maybe, what I think we'll be doing.
Honestly, yeah, that might be like when I was a kid, like I loved doing those, like, you know, the school plays and whatever, and like anything creative.
But not, yet not technical. Always. That's the thing. Like
that's the sweet spot. I think that's why I feel so drawn to it, and why so many other people feel so drawn to it. I think because it kind of. A lot of different things are coming together, right? Like you have this very difficult problem to solve, but it's also very creative, and it's really fun. It's really fun also to just when you get the end result, it's kind of a reward in itself, right? It's like a puzzle that you're solving, and the end result is a toy that you get to play with in a way. Like, that also makes content for a game or whatever else you're working on, a movie or whatnot.
Yeah, that makes sense. But like, what would you tell someone who, like you said, you were on the edge, right, of not doing it? What would you tell someone who is watching this, who's just overwhelmed with what they're seeing right now, right? With like, oh, I for sure can't do that yet.
Right? Yeah, right. Because like, because everything is kind of obscured, you don't really know what's going on in the background. I guess like, I mean, I think that seeing these kinds of things is helpful in a way, because what pushed me over the edge was being inspired by something that someone else made, and I think it was from Spider-Man, the city generation, the New York City generator, the building generators, that was made by X-Ray Halperin and probably some other people as well, unless only he did it, I'm not sure. But like, when I saw that, I'm like, what? Houdini can do that? Because, you know, like, I saw Houdini a couple times during my studies and whatnot, but it was always like, I remember like, the first time I saw it was, I was watching Gnomon Workshop tutorials, and it was like, master explosions using Houdini. And I'm like, oh, I don't care. I don't care about simulations. I don't care about VFX. So I always thought it was the VFX tool. But then I saw that they made like 80% of the city in Spider-Man. I'm like, holy shit, this looks amazing. I can do that. And then I was kind of like, I don't care how hard it is. It must be possible somehow. And I think like, I think what people that want to try it should just be should be ready for is that it's going to take a little while until you see kind of the fruits of your labor. When I started learning Houdini, I was like the thing that pushed me over the edge was that I was at work in that Archviz company, and a colleague of mine was making kitchens for, you know, like one of those websites, those kitchen configurators where you can click some buttons on the UI and a new kitchen appears and whatever. The thing was, this was all done by hand. So, you know, making all these configurable kitchens meant that someone had to make like 35 different kitchen models so that all these variations are there, you know, hard coded, baked, basically. And then she did that. And then a day later, a client was like, can we move all the handles to the left side instead?
Oh.
And then she, all these 35 kitchens again by hand. I felt like that broke her.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, that's not okay, man. That's not, this is not the way. And then I spent, I think like 6 months after work, just like watching Houdini tutorials by, you know, by Simon Vestrate, by Rohan Dalvi, I don't know, like all the greats, just to kind of get my bearings in making something like procedural, you know, like making a box and beveling it and then this kind of stuff.
Makes sense. Yeah.
After 6 months, I had a really crappy prototype of a kitchen generator, and I basically just made a GIF, and then I showed the GIF to my boss. I'm like, we could do that. And that convinced them to at least let me do like 50-50, like 3D modeling and 50% R&D with Houdini. And the ball kind of started rolling, because then I gained experience at work and I had these real projects that I could test my knowledge on. And I think that is the important thing, is like doing something, like having a project, because you never know how to get there. I never, like the bridge tool or the Project Grok tools, I never knew how to get there. That's the thing. As a tech artist, you never know the answer. Like over time, you will acquire more and more, you know, like a gut feeling of like, maybe I could do it like this, but you never know. And so it's always, the goal is always the important thing, because you will find a way somehow to that goal.
That's so interesting, man. Like, you touched on so many points that are very important to expand on. Like,
sorry for rambling too much.
No, you're right. Like, here's the thing, like, you have to be a little bit, sometimes you need to think a bit in a businessy way, and I don't know how to put this, but like how you did it, you really wanted to learn this tool, and you thought, like, at work you were very frustrated with the fact that, you know, that person had to do everything by hand again, and you had to like put time on your own to just explore. Like, you knew that there must have been an answer for this, or you had this gut feeling. But then, most importantly, you didn't just do it and then threw that project away. You presented and pitched the idea, you know? And this comes almost as an extrovert, right? Like, you want to show your ideas. And I feel like a lot of tech artists are stuck in the introvert part of like creation, and like they would do that tool, and maybe they don't even show that tool.
Ooh, it was very helpful, yeah, for sure.
Because I mean, that was how you started, if you think about it.
I mean, the thing is, it took me a while to get it, but now I think I get it why in every job application for tech artist, it says communication skills as like one of the things that they're looking for. Because you think like, why, man? I'm on a computer. Why do I need to talk? But it's actually super important because you usually are like the guy in between different teams. And you know, like you talk to the programmers, you talk to the designers, you talk to, I don't know, art directors or whatever. And you kind of need to be able to communicate with all of them. And I mean, sometimes that also means just join people for lunch and just get to know them, you know? Like it's, I feel like, I mean, it's not, I don't think it's a requirement, probably. You could still be, you know, cracked at Houdini and never talk to anyone. But I noticed that like building up relations with other people is very helpful in your work and also in your career, right? Because how are, that's the thing, right? Like there are so many people that are super good at what they do, but nobody knows them. And that's the thing. You can be as good, you can be the best guy in Houdini, but if no one knows you, then it doesn't matter. Like at least if you care about your skills being recognized in some way. So I, by the way, yeah, everyone go to conferences. Like important thing, go to conferences and talk to people.
Which conferences would you suggest?
My favorite is the Everything Procedural Conference. It's I think every April, like usually end of April. It's in the Netherlands in Breda at the, what is it called? The Breda University of Applied Sciences. Like a bunch of really good tech artists, Houdini tech artists have been from there. Anastasia Opara, Simon Verstraete, I think Paul Ambrosiussen, who started SideFX Labs or was the lab's lead.
Wow.
A bunch of other people, like insanely cracked people are from that place.
Wow.
And
I wonder how it is like to just hang out, even if you don't have any idea about Houdini, just hang out with those people and
it's
like,
really fun.
yeah.
Like, I'm not sure how much I should say, but
It's
it's
too
really
much
fun.
fun.
It's you know, for a work conference, it's really good.
That's awesome, man. Let's touch a little bit about the Skylark, and
Yeah, sure.
because you talked before we went on the podcast about how you wanted it to be. I mean, you're not, it's not all your project. You took part of it, right? And the videos that you created, actually, you know what? I'm not gonna explain. You explain it.
Like just in general, like about my my part in that project.
Just the project as a whole. When, how did you
Sure.
start? What was the idea, the vision, etc.?
Yeah, sure. So like you said, of course, this is not all me. Like the a bunch of the videos in the background are from, you know, from Simon, like Simon Bestrate or Houdini Simon, as many people know him. Maan Chokra, who was also a part of it, Lea Kronenberger, who was the art lead and built the entire scene with our
Cool,
tools,
cool.
and George Hume, who maybe some people know, you know, like his Natsura tools that he's working on right now. He's making these like Houdini plant generators. Anyway, so we were a team of five people, and you know, the way it kind of goes is like we got to know each other on one of these conferences, or at least that was my journey. I got to know Simon, I don't know, he saw some of the stuff that I did, and we had a good rapport, and he was like, "Hey, you know, you want to be a part of this?" And I'm like, "Sure, man. What the? Can I swear?"
Yeah, of course, you did already.
Oh shit. Okay. But yeah, but basically I was like, of course, man. And then we kind of, you know, it changes. Like last time it was a bit different than this time, but basically the way it goes is like we get a briefing of like, hey, this is kind of the idea that we're going for, and then we talk about it, maybe exchange some ideas, and then there's like a whiteboard full of tools, and everyone is like thinking like, which one would I like to do? And then we talk about like, you know, and in my case, I saw the bridge, and I was like, you know what? I think the bridge could be kind of cool, because we basically just have a bunch of reference images, and then we try, you know, to get there as best as we can. Mm. And the reference image was really cool. It was, I think, from like, there was something from Skull and Bones and from Legend of Zelda, you know, just these really crudely hammered together, like this kind of tree houses and then whatnot, just like wooden structures that are like, yeah, really crude. And I was like, that looks like that would be really fun, like, and awesome to make. And I was like, you know what, this time I want to do the easy thing, the small thing, and see if I can just make it like really nice. And I think it worked out. I'm really happy with what I ended up with. In general, I guess my approach is like, I want to make tools that kind of feel like alive, you know, like when you see it in the video, you kind of see that whenever it's like moving across the surface, it's like it's changing, it's adapting, and it almost looks like, I don't know, a caterpillar or something that's like going over the surface. And the same was like last year with the Project Grot, with the flesh tools and stuff. I noticed that this is kind of something that I really enjoy. Like when you...
The organic feel.
Yeah, yeah. Even when it's not organic, right? Yeah. Like it is just wood and nails and stuff, but it feels alive. And I noticed like, oh yeah, that's it. That's the thing. That's what I want to do.
That's cool.
And and there was a bunch of other tools, you know, like when you're done with your main tool, there isn't really... You do have a contract, of course, and you do have like some must deliverables. But once you're done with that, then it's kind of like, hey, how can we just push this further? Like, you know, I have a few days left. Maybe I can make you a scattering tool, and then you just make that. And, you know, or maybe I'll tweak my tool a little bit more. You know, like it's kind of what I like about working with side effects, actually, is like they just kind of let you do whatever. It's just, it's pure trust based. It's just like, it's kind of scary also, because ownership. Then.
Yeah,
exactly. You have a lot of ownership over whatever you're working on. But I think that can also be scary for a lot of people, because, you know, no one tells you like, no, this is not working. Or yeah, this is awesome. It's just like,
yeah,
I think this is good.
It's scary because like we navigated a structure where everybody told us what to do. Like if you think parenting, everybody tells you what to do. Then you go to school and everybody tells you what to do. Then you have the university where you get told what to do. And then freedom becomes very scary at one point.
Yeah, or my main job even, right? Like, I mean, in my 8 hours every day, I work at CIG and we have daily stand-up meetings where we talk about the most meticulous little details. Yeah. And nothing gets released before it's not signed off by your manager and his manager and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
You feel like if you're not like in a high up position, you feel like there's nothing you can do wrong, because there will always be a couple of eyes looking at it from different parts of the development cycle. But here it's like, cool.
Like, go ahead and do it.
I'm like, okay.
But that comes with like its own pros and cons, right? Like you're afraid, that's the con. But what did you find that was a pro?
The pros are huge in the sense that like you feel like you can really do whatever you want. And I feel like that came through with the bridge that we're seeing right now. Like no one told me what to do. It was just I was just experimenting and seeing like, can I make it more fun? Can I make it more playful? Even if it's maybe, I guess I don't want to say like it's going against the briefing. That's not what I want to do. But let's say, for instance, in the flesh tools that I made last year, if some people here in the video in the watching are aware, we weren't really doing flesh to begin with, like, we had a bunch of different concepts, and some of them were kind of organic, kind of alien, and some of them were more realistic, concrete, rebar, you know, that kind of stuff. And in the beginning, we wanted to go for like a futuristic structure that has since been eaten away by time. Mm-hmm. But it was supposed to be just like realistic rebar, exposed rebar and concrete and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then as I was playing with that, because I made the door thing that you see when the camera comes in, and as I was playing with that, I was like, man, that's kind of cool how like when pieces fall out of the concrete, how the rebar is still attached to it. It looks almost organic, you know, mm-hmm. like going back to what we were talking about before. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, wait, what if it is organic? And then I was trying, instead of having this like internal rebar structure, mm-hmm. I thought like, what if a piece falls down, it's like, you know, it's just connected with some fibers. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, you know, then it was this fibrous rebar. But then I'm like, okay, but what if it is actually flesh? And I kind of kept it a secret from the others until I felt like it looked cool enough to convince them. I mean,
the pitch again.
Yeah, exactly. It's the pitch. Like you want to make, if you show something that is going a little bit against the original plan, make it cool.
Make it good. Yeah.
Yeah. Make it good. And I mean, hey, honestly, maybe if I had just said it, or they would have been on board, or maybe, or maybe in their heads, they were like, yeah, maybe it's going to be a bit more organic. I don't know. I don't know what was in their heads. But the original idea was concrete and rebar.
Yeah.
And then when we did the flesh, they were like, hey, this is kind of sick.
It's kind of sick.
Yeah. And then and the cool thing is then that kind of steered the entire project in a slightly different direction. Because then because there was flesh on the ruins and it was kind of the center where a lot of stuff was coming out, they were like, what if there's flesh growing out of the ruins? So we needed additional flesh tools for that, like some auxiliary tools to add around to set dress. And then we were like, okay, but what if also, you know, there are these like hanging, these bridge connections that are also kind of fleshy. Those are not done by me. Those were done by Simon. Hmm. But suddenly the entire scene became more organic and more alien and more like demonic, hellish kind of. And that was really cool. And, you know, and this was kind of, this is kind of the end result of, you know, giving us all this freedom. Because imagine if we had every week there was some higher up from Side Effects that was constantly like micromanaging us, like saying like, but we said rebar originally, so maybe we shouldn't, you know, like, but it's kind of this like this implicit trust that, you know, you all know what you're doing and just do the thing and do it cool, you know, like that's kind of how it goes.
Wow. I mean, that environment that you get to have the freedom. I wanted to ask, like, how much time have you spent on, like, Skylark or the project before?
So we had a bit more time for Grot. And this time it was a bit shorter. Like, so, you know, we basically get, like, a few days, like, a budget for a few days. Mm-hmm. And then it's up to you to, like, are you strict with yourself and you only do the days, or I don't know, sometimes maybe the thing is like, I don't feel good submitting something that I don't like. So I feel like, okay, if I have to add one more hour, then, you know, I'm going to add one more hour, you know, and do it pro bono just so the tool looks sick. But basically the way it goes, like for Skylark, we had, I think like 9 days, or at least that was for me, like maybe the others had a bit more or less time depending on the tool that you're working on. But yeah, but 9 days. And the thing is, you have to remember that we're also all working full time. Like we work in games, like we have to do normal jobs. So yeah, it's a bit, I guess that's the only tough part about this, like about being a part of this, is like if you also have another job, you need to be really good with your time management. When I did Grot, the first project for me, it was a bit more difficult. It was very new for me, and I was like, you know, I just wanted to deliver the coolest thing possible, and it was very difficult for me to kind of navigate the time management. This time I was a bit better, and basically you just say, all right, Monday to Friday, I just don't think about it, or maybe you let some ideas marinate in your head. Like, I guess like that is a weird soft skill that I got used to, is that like, I'm not working on the thing, but I'm just kind of thinking about it. You know, I'm like, how am I going to do the stilts of the wooden bridge? Like what is the logic of, you know, how this plank gets attached to that, whatever. And then you kind of already, like when you sit down and it's the day that you chose for your workday, when you sit down, you are already like, you already exactly know what you're going to do. And then you do the thing. And but that took a while for me to reach that point, right? Like, because often when you're working on these tools, you still need to figure it out as you go. But the thing about these projects, the like Skylark and Grot, like, is that there is not so much research involved in that. It's mostly just, you know, just do the thing. So, I mean, it's not like I don't always have the answer. Like, I still need to experiment and stuff. But usually you try to not get lost in, like, I don't know, finding the most optimized workflow or the most fanciest simulations and blah, 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 blah. No, it's good enough. Just, you know, it's good enough. Yeah,
it's also depending on like what is the tool used for. Like, if it's a tool for an environment artist who, you know, they're gonna take it and build a world with, you're not thinking about optimization as much, I guess. Especially when it comes to things like features. If, let's say, the bridge breaks down and it has to simulate 400 frames or whatever, to look like it's broken. Like, this is gonna take time, right? And in the game, there might be 2 broken bridges or 3 broken bridges, so it's not gonna be a big deal. Because optimization, if you need to optimize, you need to go through the whole node tree, and it might take you 2 weeks to just optimize instead of like generating for 50 minutes. So you have to weigh in the options, right?
Yeah, I think like, yeah, that is a good point actually to touch on. Like, I think sometimes you kind of have to ask yourself, like, is this worth it? Like, is it worth it to spend, I don't know, a quarter of the time that I have to just make it a bit more optimized so that I get one less weird comment in my social media? Are we just going to finish the project and maybe I make it look cooler? You know, like, it's a thing. Like, this is a learning project and a tech demo. It's not a game. Like, so, you know, like, if you want to learn how to really do it, you know, you learn that on the job, or like, I don't know, from 3D modeling. Like, but this is just meant to showcase you, like, hey, this is how you can spawn all kinds of things to, you know, basically the idea of that tool was like how you can, with just a bunch of points and some very rough information of the scale of objects, how you can still make something that looks pretty intricate and handmade. But of course, like, if this was for a real game, oh my God, no, I would not just submit that. I would still work on that. Like, there's still so many things that I would have wanted to add. Like, I mean,
but just to interrupt, like, this is anyway, sure. Like, not your goal with this. Your goal is to showcase the tools, and if you would like show something proper, like optimization and things like that, it would take so much away from the like demonstration. Or the fact of you just wanting to showcase what you can do. It's like a sketch versus a final piece, I guess.
Yeah, completely. Like, I feel like people have to remember, like, that, you know, something like procedural art, like Houdini or whatever, it's a bottomless, it's a treasure chest with no bottom, basically. You can keep learning and learning and learning and learning. If I wanted to make a tutorial that would teach you everything that I know, it would take months, and I don't have time for that. Like, so basically I know I have 3 hours, and what can I show you in 3 hours so that you just know more than you did before? And that's kind of my goal.
It's about jump starting. It's about like, if motivation was fuel, you're putting the spark. if someone had, like, in when you started the procedural, when you started with Houdini, you've had a lot of motivation, you've had a lot of fuel, and the kitchen in that aspect was your spark, and that what got you started. And that was just the kitchen, and I don't want to diss your kitchen generation tool, but like, when I see that bridge, like every time I'm looking at it, I'm like, I really want to get my hands on that. I really want to learn it, right? Like, I want to know what goes behind it, because I've created a bridge generation tool before, but like to see how like handmade this looks, I'm like, that's super cool.
Yeah, and that's kind of the beauty of it, right? Like, you can have 10 tech artists and have 10 different tools or more, even, you know, like for the same prompt, basically. Like, that's the cool thing. Everyone has a different approach to everything. There's no right or wrong way. Maybe some tools are slower, some are faster, some are prettier, or it's all subjective, right? Like, in the end, it's just about what is the problem that you want to solve, and did you solve it, like, sufficiently? Mm. There is no, it's not a binary yes or no, right? Like, it's up to you and up to whoever is judging it. Like, I don't know, your boss or something. Or like, if you don't have a boss, then it's just you.
It's, you know, people looking outside in think like a tech art job is very brutal. Like, you need to know what you're doing. But if you don't do it, and like you hear a person like you describing on the job, and that there is no wrong answer as long as it works, it sounds very forgiving. Would you say that?
I mean, that might also be our studio. Like, CIG is like a really cool place to work, at least from my experience. Like, we are in the R&D department for the planet's environment team. Like, we're called Organics, and we make, like, you know, trees, rocks, caves, cool, and whatnot. And, you know, and R&D is a bit different than just straight up production. You know, if you're a 3D modeler, your time is very rigidly scheduled. With R&D, it's a bit more difficult because you're basically doing stuff that hasn't been done before. Mm. And so it's harder to time it. And
it's almost like making micro games within,
I guess,
game.
In some way. And I mean, and it's, there's a lot of unknowns, right? Like, that is the hard part. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like, honestly, like, I feel like there is a certain amount of freedom that you have because of the unknowns. You sometimes get some extra time just to make sure that you're doing it right. But the hard part is the unknown. Like, you know, if you're someone that doesn't really like dealing with unknowns, then that is something you should be aware of, because I never know how I'm gonna solve the problem that I'm getting. Like right now I'm doing something, I can't talk about what, but right now I'm doing something, a project that I've never done before and have no idea how I'm going to do it. And I even asked my boss, I'm like, yeah, so how are we going to do this? And he's like, I don't know yet, but we'll figure it out. And, you know, even your boss is kind of like, you know, we'll figure it out. It's like, okay.
Wow. That's insane, man. That's like so hard to comprehend, you know, but I do the same thing with visual effects, right? Like real-time visual effects. Most of the times I don't know what to do, but it's something that inspires, something that, you know, you get there somehow.
Yeah. And I guess, like, the thing is, in the beginning, I was freaking out a lot about this fact that you usually don't know how you do it. But the more often you end up figuring it out, the more you start to trust yourself that, like, even though I don't know it now, I probably will figure it out.
Yeah.
And there's always other people around you, right? Like, I mean, at least so in my case, like, in our team, there's like two other tech artists. It's my colleague who's a senior tech artist, and my boss who's some crazy ass title, senior principal tech artist. you know, like, I feel like whenever I'm stuck, I can ask them and they will usually have an answer. And even when they don't have an answer, there's all, like, we're 1,000 people at our company and we have a bunch of programmers that can help you with this and that. Like, you're never alone. And even if you're alone, if you're, you know, if you're just by yourself learning Houdini, you can go to different communities and ask there for help, right? Like, usually the community is very helpful, I would say. And there are so many things that have been done already, right? Like, especially when you're starting out, I guess most people will do the things that have been done before, right? Like, what are you going to do, right? Like a bridge, or you're going to do a building, a house generator. You're going to make, I don't know, terrain. It's all been done before. And usually you will find a solution on the internet. The question is, if that is your solution. Because what I've found out is that, you know, all this stuff that I learned about, because I was mostly using Houdini Engine for Unreal and then making tools for Unreal and stuff. A lot of that knowledge was useless, because now I work in a company where we have a proprietary engine, and now I had to relearn all that. And, you know, it's, you start from scratch so many times. Like, if I would know, you know, if I in the future go to a different company that has their own engine, it's again, like, God damn it, I have to start again from scratch. But basically, like, what I'm trying to get at is, like, there's a lot of unknowns, but usually you will find someone that has the answers.
Yeah, and it's a camaraderie feeling almost, right? Like,
yeah, and it's also why the communication part is so important, sure. Right? What I brought up before is because you're dealing with so many unknowns, and because you're often dealing with, often you're the glue between different softwares, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so for instance, I had a tool that I made at my main job at CIG where, I don't know, there was this one thing that, where I had to do something crazy. I mean, for me, it was crazy, where like the tool had to download a text file from Perforce and then read it and then look for a certain, you know, look for certain stuff in there and then check it against another text file, you know, and like, I'm like, how do you do that? And then, but then I had help, like how to do that. And I learned a lot of Python by doing that.
Yeah, Python's amazing.
It is. Learn Python.
Learn Python. Everybody. I just started a week ago.
And save your files.
Wow. I guess it's just like you said, it's a bottomless treasure box or whatever. Like, you would just keep learning. And because everybody comes from a different background, like, you have tech artists that are more on the art side, and then you have tech artists that are more on the tech side, and then you have tech artists who started with a whole different, you know, industry. You know, like, they come from publishing or whatever. You know, it's just like, you have so many people with different perspectives that's just going to help you out and kind of make you see what you're not seeing yet. And again, about this topic about communication, and being able to put your pride aside, your ego aside, your imposter syndrome aside, almost, right? Like, this is like a bit too much mental gymnastics, but how would you put it simply to someone who's just starting with tech art?
In what context? Like,
in putting asking these... for help.
Asking for help. Yeah, right. It's kind of... It is kind of difficult. I honestly still sometimes wait a little bit too long before I ask for help, because of course you want to figure it out yourself, right? Like, it's super satisfying to, you know, like, hit your head against the wall, and until you figure it out, and then you learn so much from doing it yourself. But at the same time, usually you have a deadline at some point, and so I think it's important to recognize when you're reaching the danger zone.
Yeah.
And then you just gotta say, okay, I don't care how this is gonna make me look. It probably, if no one cares, no one cares. That's the thing. That's why we work together, right? Like, if you work in a studio with 300 or upwards of, I don't know how many people, that's the reason why we work together, because we should collaborate.
Yeah.
and so, you know, just do what you're paid to do and work with other people. Yeah. And that involves also asking questions. But I still feel that sometimes. But it's always surprisingly enriching. Like, I think, was it today or yesterday? I think today or yesterday, I asked my colleague Lucas, something about voxels and VDBs, because it's not my strong suit, but he's been working on like VDBs. And basically, whenever I have a question about VDBs, he's the guy that I talk to. He probably knows more than our boss, right? Like, because that's all he does.
Specialization, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's incredibly specialized in that topic. And so, yeah, yesterday I had a question about that. Like, I don't know, something about like volume wrangles or whatever. And we had this little talk about like 15 minutes where he showed me a bunch of different things. And now I know a bit more about VDBs that I would have never been able to find out by myself, right? Because that's the other thing. I feel like there's a fly here, whatever.
ADHD. Yeah. This podcast is sponsored by ADHD. Yeah.
but that's the thing, right? So often, especially when you deal with something so technical like game development, especially tech art and Houdini, you don't even know the words that you have to type into Google to find an answer for the problem that you have. Like, and I feel like that's why it's even more important to just talk to people, because, you know, I can tell him like, why is this thing not working? And then it turns out I'm over here. And he's like, no, wait, dude, you got it completely wrong, man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You got this and that, you know? I think, yeah, like communication.
Like, and also like putting your ego aside, there's the saying, you know, if you ask questions, it's gonna look bad on you, it's gonna affect how the team is gonna look at you, or you might not get that raise, or you're gonna be seen as high maintenance. But you know what high maintenance really is you not saying anything.
And people cleaning up after you. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, no, but also like trying to like keep your ego in check is a big thing. Like I had to learn that also. Like I wasn't, you know, I started very differently. You know, because like, you know, you're new at a company, especially something as cool as Star Citizen, and you wanna be a part of that, right? And you want your work to be recognized as a part of that. And in the beginning, all my tools were like my babies. And whenever like someone was like, you know, I don't know, when there's any kind of feeling in the air of like maybe someone would take over my tool, I was like, no, my baby, like don't take my baby. But the thing is, like, I don't know, it doesn't matter really, like, because you already did your part, and there will be so many others ahead of you. That's the thing. That's what I learned. Like, all the stuff that I did after these tools was so much cooler. Like, I can't wait to, at some point, like, hopefully be able to show the tools that I've been making so far. Like, that's the cool thing of at CIG. We can show our work. Cool. After a certain time. It's still going to take a bit, but anyway. But now, I don't know. Now I don't care. Like, because like sometimes a different team needs a variation of your tool, and you don't know how to do it, or you don't have time to do it, right? Like you're part of that team, and this team is doing something completely different, and you would need to learn their workflow and figure out how you can automate it, and blah 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 blah. And so now I'm just like, all right, whatever. Like, I'll show you how I did it, and then you can do it. You know, like, who cares? Like, it's like, yeah.
It's a lesson I feel that a lot of us artists, tech artists, whatever, we don't learn because of the way the self-learning is set up right now. Like, of course, if you go to university and you learn tech art, let's say you went to the Dutch university, for example, you will learn all of this, I feel, because you will do projects with your fellow students. But for us, we don't have game jams. I feel like Skylark is like the closest tech art jam I've ever seen. You know, 9 days, do that, do this, right? But we don't have art jams. We don't have tech art jams. And we learned that very late, because what we do when you're self-learning, you probably are doing the projects on your own. You know, you're having this intimate connection to the tool that you're creating, because you created it from scratch. But the fact of the matter is, when you're in a team, you're put in a pipeline, You're probably doing this, taking tasks from behind you and processing and then handing it, right? And I feel that's just the lack of pride, like, even with online courses, there's videos. That's all what you do. Follow my lead, do exactly what, like, what I do. There is no, like, something where you do with the other students. Like, even if you signed up for a workshop, 8 people signed up with you, you're probably not doing anything with them. And I feel like that's such a waste. That's such a waste. I wish, like, I am aiming to make that platform, like, with a couple of friends of mine. I really want to, like, enable that for people, like, who want to learn. Like, come on, let's get 5 people, 5 students who signed up for this workshop, work together to create something and put it out there. You know, I feel like that's the better learning than just, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Because, like, you know, even though, like, Project Skylark and the other one is kind of, it's a simulation, right? It's not like a real production environment. Mm. But even though it's just, like, fake, you still end up, you know, you still end up in a lot of these similar situations that you would have to navigate in a production environment, such as, for instance, like the features that you're making for a tool, right? Like, because when I made the bridge tool, I was just like, I was coming up with this feature and that feature and whatnot. But you don't know which features the artist is really looking for, right? Like, it might be that some of the features that you're making are completely useless and they just look cool because you thought, wow, that would be so sick if it could do this and that. But then there's, like, a fundamental feature that you completely forgot about because you are not the person building the level, the level art.
True.
And it's this collaboration that makes you a better tech artist because you start to, you know, you, it's this feedback again, the communication. It's like, it's the feedback that, the iteration that makes the tool into something better, something more usable and something more user-friendly. Like someone asked me, at a workshop at the Everything Procedural Conference, is like, what is the right amount of parameters? And I'm like, I don't know, man, it depends. Like, because it's like, who is this for? Is it just for you? Is it for someone else? Is it for an artist? Is it supposed to run automatic? All the, depending on which framework the tool, which context the tool is running in, it's completely different, right?
Like, is it for the player? That's also something
that, yeah.
Yeah, that needs to be simplified again.
Totally, totally. Like often I had the experience that, like, you know, the artists wanted more control. They wanted more parameters. Or then, I don't know, or then you went too far and they're like, ah, it's too fine grained, it's too granular, like, give me less. Like, I just wanna draw something and something cool appears. You know, like, you never know. And that's the thing. One person is usually not enough. You need to test it on several people. Yep. What I can recommend people, by the way, is usually I like to have, like, one guinea pig. Like, the first person that I give the tool, and then they test it, and they're, like, my power user. Mm. And then I, you know, to just make it functional at all. And then you slowly give it to more people and more people, because the thing you never want if you work in a bigger environment is to just release something out there, and suddenly you have a bunch of people using your tools, and then they come back with a bunch of complaints of, like, this isn't working, that isn't working. And I'm like, oh my God, yeah, of course, no one tested it. You know, like, it's, I feel like you should try to slowly increase. It's kind of like, right, like what games companies do with server stress testing.
Yeah.
You never want to release your game immediately to everyone, because then the servers are going to crash.
All right, so here's a question. Mm-hmm. I have 2 more, and then it's done.
Yeah, sure.
So, like, the first question is, like, okay, what are the stages of production a tool like this goes through, like the bridge, for example? Are we talking ideation, reference gathering, creation, implementation? Mm-hmm. All right, so, like, what does it go through?
That is actually a really good point. So in the beginning, like I mentioned, we just have, like, a mood board with some reference images of, like, this is kind of the vibe that we want to go for. And then I kind of look at like maybe I will gather more, like because I want to see, hey, is there maybe something that we've missed, something else that I like? And then I put them together and I start looking for what they all have in common. And then I try to basically abstract the information and try to already kind of think of features. I think, you know what's really helpful? I think it's really helpful when you start drawing stuff, like really crude sketches, because what happens when you're drawing is it's this step of abstraction, because our brain is trying to, I don't know, like segment things into neat, discrete things. And you are basically already coming up with features in your head. And so what I did with the bridge is like, I just took a screenshot of a certain bridge that I liked, a reference image, and then I started drawing over it in different colors of like, okay, so the blue thing could be the pillar, the stilts, and then but the stilts are also connected, I see on this image. And then I see, okay, there are these planks that you can walk on. How are they attached to the other stuff? Like what is the, you know, you need some kind of plausibility of that this thing could even stand on its own.
Mm.
And so I try to like, yeah, just kind of come up with the rules as I go. And then I immediately want to test it out somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes I go into Unreal as fast as possible. You don't always need to do that. It helps sometimes because there are some things that you might have missed. Like mm-hmm. maybe there's an asset in the level that completely breaks your tool or whatever.
Mm.
Usually it's already helpful if you just have some placeholder stuff inside of Houdini. And,
like
and yeah,
cubes,
and
then I, basically? Like,
yeah. And,
prototyping.
In my tutorial, yeah, exactly. In my tutorial, I just have like, you know, a plane with some noise on it and then some spheres. And it's like, all right, these are rocks and mountains.
Yeah.
You know, like, just don't spend too much time on that. Just something that vaguely resembles what the final level is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And while you're doing that, you're going to start to understand the limitations very quickly. And you have to come up with certain workarounds or new rules. And really important, as soon as you have anything remotely usable, immediately give it to someone and let them test it, because that's when the real problems are going to come out. Because the thing is, you know your tool best, you know what you can do and can't do. But you also have a very, you know, you have like blinders on, like a horse, you know, like you only know what you know. And only when you give it to another person, they will really break the tool and tell you about all these things that are not working and features that they might want. And some of them were like super important. Like what was it? I mean, because of that, like let's go back to Project Grot, for instance. Like in the beginning, all the flesh stuff was supposed to be one big tool. I had this big ruin thing that was fully automatic and was just like, you know, it was trying to just, I was trying to basically program art direction into this thing,
mm-hmm.
which was a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then all it took was just like Leah, our art lead, testing the tool and be like, I kind of would like to have more control. Couldn't we just split it up into two different tools? And I'm like, oh my God, yes. Oh my God, this is so much better. I have less work and you have more control, right?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes it's just like, just split them up into two tools.
Less is more, right? Sometimes it's...
Yeah.
And you are like, as a technical artist, you're so much into the like, I'm going to make this whole thing work and I will put so much work. Otherwise, I'm not a good tech artist. But sometimes
exactly.
Just like... Why are you making your life
so much
harder?
Exactly, right? Like, don't do that. Yeah, and
but like,
it becomes so much better because of that.
With other tools, it does make sense to have everything together. Like, the bridge without the nails. Like, you have everything there. It's laid down, right? But, I get it. All right, last question.
Mm-hmm.
We're reaching the end of this. Is there anything that you would still like to add, promote, or tell people to do, especially beginners who are...
Yeah, for sure. I mean, first off, I'm going to do like a shameless plug. check out my, you know, I'm on Instagram, Julian Boolean. You can, basically all my socials, check out my ArtStation blog, where I break down some projects. You know, like I usually... if there's a cool product that I've worked on that I can show, I like to make a technical breakdown and show how I did that. And I'm not sure when I'll do it, but I would really like to try out live streaming because I enjoy this back and forth, this live back and forth. And I feel like, you know, like showing people how to do something and having them, you know, be able to ask questions and then deviate from what you started to make it, you know, to cater more to whoever is in your audience. I feel like that would be really cool. I'm thinking about doing it on Twitch. I already have an account, but I haven't started yet. but what I want to, let's see, what would I want to tell to people? I mean, first off, go to conferences for real. Like, put some money aside, like, I don't know, save as much as you can that you can spare every month into like a conference fund, and then go to a conference near. And the reason why I'm saying that is because it doesn't matter how good you are. If no one knows who you are, you're not really going to go very far. Usually, like some people don't need it, but I noticed a huge difference in just being in that environment. Literally just being physically at a location does so much more to you than posting portfolio pieces all the time. Because we're social creatures and because we just trust people more that we have seen, you know, like if you have one good conversation with the right person, it can change the trajectory of your career immensely.
All right. That's great advice. People, go to conferences. All right. Julian, the bullion. We'll leave all the stuff in the description that we have discussed. I will still talk to you, Julian. I'll just say goodbye to the viewers. Yo, as always, Jeff Jaros was here. See you on the next one. All right.